there are overwhelming, turbulent times, but that also means there is major potential to fill the cracks with new ideas and to transform these destructive systems. There are specific root causes for problems and holistic solutions everywhere. There is room for prosperity, there is room for regeneration and a shift in values. Another reality is possible, and that's what we're exploring here today. Welcome to Sage Talking.
I'm Andrea Fürst. I'm the head of the Hundertwasser Archive in Vienna. I'm sitting here in the headquarters of Hundertwasser in the office of the Hundertwasser Foundation. The Hundertwasser Foundation is the heir of Hundertwasser, and we have here the Hundertwasser Archive, and we are working for Hundertwasser. We are the holder of the copyright, and I'm working very close with the head of the foundation, with Mr. Harel. I have been working here for almost 30 years now. So I met Hundertwasser also personally. And here in the archive, I have systematized all the data about Hundertwasser's artwork. We have here all the documentation of his paintings, of his graphic works. We have here his texts. We have a big stock of originals. We are in care of the Hundertwasser exhibition at Kunsthaus Wien, also of the exhibition at Hundertwasser Art Center in Wangerei. So we have manifold occupations and responsibilities. I think it would even last an hour to tell you all the responsibilities and all the projects and all the things we are in care for Hundertwasser. So the headline is Hundertwasser. We are the copyright. We are the holder of the copyright. We are in contact with the collectors. We collect all kind of data, and we have all kind of information about Hundertwasser.
That's exactly why I came to you, because there's obviously a lot to talk about. Maybe you could share a little what your personal interest is in him and his art.
Yeah, my education is that of an art historian. So I studied history of art at the universities of Vienna, Innsbruck and Graz. And I had the chance to start to work here in the archive at a very young age. I started in 1992. But during my studies, it was not really, Hundertwasser was not really a topic. I had no experience or a rare experience in Austrian art, in modern art. So I started from the beginning, and I was introduced, learning by doing, or you could call it like this. I started from the bottom here. You're occupied with so many subject matters concerning the artist. So step by step, you can learn about Hundertwasser's artwork, about Hundertwasser's philosophy. Yes, and I got deeper and deeper into the matter, and more I discovered that Hundertwasser's philosophy is fascinating for me, and more I could identify with Hundertwasser as an artist, with Hundertwasser as an ecologist, with Hundertwasser as an architect, also his social critics, manifestos, his texts. There are hardly any thoughts of the artist which I would not join, which I would criticize. On the contrary, I think that his ideas, his vision, his wish and longing for a peace treaty with nature, for example, it's also my deep personal wish and my deep personal attitude towards nature, towards life, to everything. So, I'm on the right place here, I hope.
Yeah. I can completely understand that the more you learned about him, the more you became fascinated by him, because I have to say it was the same for me. And in my opinion, Friedensreich Hundertwasser was an extraordinary artist. As you already mentioned, that he wasn't just an architect or a painter. He kind of had a vision that was very relevant, ecologically sound, and that still applies today. It applied back then. So maybe you can tell us a bit more about his story and how to he became that artist that was so connected to nature in his expressions, in both the architecture and the art he created as he was.
It was a long journey, but it started already in his youth. Perhaps you know that Hundertwasser, as a child, had to experience World War II. He was 10 years old when Austria was annexed to the German Reich. And it was a very special time, very challenging, dangerous, as he was the child of a Jewish mother. And they had the chance to survive these days, these years in Vienna. But they were very limited, as you can imagine, in their radius. They had to hide, they had to be very cautious. And I think we cannot imagine how life was in this during that these years. It was difficult for Friedrich Stohwasser, this was his name at the time, to take part in ordinary life. So I think that this was the point where he started to paint, to occupy himself in the apartment, with hardly any contacts with other people besides his family. You have to know that he lived with his aunt and grandmother and his mother in a flat in the second district, where all the Jews had to move after the annexation. And it was the time when he started to paint. He had a stamp collection from his father, who had died when he was at a very young age. And he thought that the images of the stamps, they were so beautiful, so he wanted to paint things like these postage stamps that were so beautiful to him. And I think he was very close to nature also in the early age. We know from his diaries of his youth that he made many excursions with his mother into the surroundings of Vienna, into the Viennese woods. And there also he started to paint. And what he painted was nature, the landscape around his apartment at the Danube Canal. So this was the first point where art and nature were connected. So it started really in his youth time. And after the war, he finished school. And in summer, I think it was 1946, yes, he worked with a farmer. And he said that when he saw how green the grass was and how brown the earth, he knew that he should become a painter. So it was the experience of nature that brought him to painting. A personal story or a personal myth of his becoming a painter is that he used to press flowers, which he collected, and then he recognized that the the colors would fade. So he decided to paint the flowers. So these are some experiences he made that put him into a special awareness of nature. So creativity for Hundertwasser from a very early age was connected to natural processes. And later in his life, he was a very self-reflective person. He stated that his painting is a vegetative painting. And what he meant with this was also that the creation process, so the growing in, of nature, is something that is an example how creativity should happen. So it is a slow movement. It's not automatic, like automatism, for example, another field of painting in the 50s. It's not unconsciousness. It's not in a certain movement that paintings come into being, but it's a very contemplative, a very concentrated process, and from the beginning, Hundertwasser made the comparison between his artwork and nature. So he said that a painting should be as beautiful as a plant. And this comparison is the basis of his attitude towards painting. Another issue about nature that has to do with his later occupation with architecture, it was also an experience he made after the war. When he walked through the streets of Vienna, he discovered that after the war, the earth was visible in the cities. And he thought that this is an improvement of the cities when there's earth and when there is grass and when there is spontaneous vegetation. And he thought, this was the starting point for his occupation with architecture and with urbanistic thoughts, that he pled for nature to be included in the city, to be included in architecture. 1968, in a text which he called Loose from Laws, Architecture Boycott Manifesto, he said that there should be layers of earth on each roof in order that vegetation can grow there, big trees can grow there. And in 1971, he wrote a manifesto called Afforestation of the City, and even already in 1971, it's his architecture philosophy is fully developed with the idea that everything that is horizontal under the earth, there should be nature. Everything what is horizontal should be green. It should be afforested. It is his wish or his plea for requested the afforestation of the cities. So this is the idea of giving nature back territories which have been occupied by building activities. So in every aspect, it starts with painting, with the comparison between the process, the creative process of nature, and it goes to architecture. And of course, Hundertwasser's relation with nature made him aware of the damages, the harm that was done to nature by man, by modern society, by industrialization, by whatever the problems are. And this is a big part in his philosophy. And he has campaigned for environmental protection since the 1970s. And all his attitude towards nature, his demand for protection of nature, I think it's actual up to date. And this is also the reason why Hundertwasser is so present in so many fields, not only as a painter, but also as an architect, as an ecologist, and as a visionary for a better future.
Yeah, I think he definitely had a very important vision. And I have to say, I kind of got lost a little in all your stories. It was like I was listening to an audiobook instead of doing an interview, because there was so much wonderful information in there that we learned a little bit about Hundertwasser in school, which was the first time when I heard about him, but never in depth like this. So thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. And I think it also just, again, shows how much just through the fact, even it feels like through all these impressionable experiences he had and his deep respect and love for nature, that already through something like changing his name, as you mentioned, from Friedrich Stohwasser to Friedensreich Hundertwasser, which translates to something like Peace Realm 100 Water, that he really felt he had to embody, you know, this connection he had to nature and kind of his vision that he had for his world. So that it was even a very personal thing, which definitely shines through his art and his work and the architecture. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about what Hundertwasser's main goals were when building, when designing buildings or spaces, and also the aspects that make the buildings so unique and ecological.
As I mentioned before, Hundertwasser demanded that it is necessary that territories are given back to nature, which building activities had taken from nature. So I think the most important aspects of his architecture are the afforested roof, the tree tenants, and the spontaneous vegetation. I'm aware that many people who know Hundertwasser and who are acquainted with his architecture would at first place see the decorative elements, the color in architecture, the special forms, everything true. Nevertheless, I would say that the ecological aspect is the most important with Hundertwasser. And this is also the main focus he put on his first manifestos, because Hundertwasser was not and could not work as an architect from the beginning. This was a long project, a long process, with starting with texts and manifestos and speeches. For example, the very first time he could utter himself about architecture, it was in 1958 at a congress in Seckau, where art critics and architects and artists met. And there he used the opportunity to say something about architecture. Of course, it was a bit strange that a painter would have such concrete criticism on architecture. But from the beginning, Hundertwasser had very concrete ideas about architecture, but he couldn't realize any architectures in the 1960s or in the 1970s, but he tried to visualize his architectural ideas in the form of models. So he had models built, and in these models, he showed up how architecture should be like. So from the beginning, He wanted to break up the grid system of rational architecture. From in his first manifestos, he criticized functional architecture. He criticized the geometric straight line. And in his first models, he invented also new architectural forms like the terrace house, the high-rise meadow house. And he tried not only, it's not only decoration, which is the feature of Hundertwasser architecture, but it is the idea of nature. It is the idea of new architectural forms. It's the idea of breaking the grid system. It's the idea of variety instead of monotony. This can be done by, as he showed in his architecture projects, with the dancing windows, breaking the geometrical straight skyline. Of course, there's color in architecture. There's color in his architecture projects. It's the use of mosaics, the use of color, the use of columns. I mentioned the dancing windows. That means that windows are of different size and shape. Yes, I think everyone is aware that very typical for Hundertwasser architecture are the onion towers. And I hope I haven't forgotten anything that makes Hundertwasser's architecture so special.
I think a lot of people who have seen something from him, they could spot one of his buildings from pretty far away and see that that is something Hundertwasser has created. And I would really love for you to go deeper into the ecological aspects of his buildings. Like, for example, the concepts of the window right, the Fensterrecht, and that of the tree tenant, the Baumieter, which he kind of introduced.
Yeah. Window right is something very special that illustrates Hundertwasser's idea that the tenant of a house should also have the right to interfere with the architecture, because Hundertwasser said that architecture is the third skin of man. So a human being, according to Hundertwasser, has three skins. The first skin is the epidermis. The second skin are the clothes. And the third skin is the architecture. And as you should be an individual and decide over your clothes, you even should be able to decide in which house you live, how this house looks like, and the tenant should be involved in the individualization of his habitat. So the window right says that every tenant has the right to lean out of his window and to paint the facade as long as his arm reaches. This is the window right was formulated by Hundertwasser for the first time in the manifesto, the Moldiness Manifesto, which he read out at this congress I mentioned first in Seckau in Styria in 1958. And it's a fact that in all Hundertwasser architecture projects, this window right is stipulated in the contracts. And in Hundertwasser architecture, in the resident buildings, it's allowed for the tenants that they use their window right. The concept of a tree tenant is something that Hundertwasser invented in 1973 when he was invited to the Triennale di Milan. There he made a concept for greening the city through installing tree tenants, trees, in the facades of the buildings. And In this triennale, in this intervention in 1973, he installed 15 trees in the facades of the main street of the Via Manzoni in Milan. The years after this first tree tenant action, he installed tree tenants also in Vienna or in Munich. And of course, in all his architecture projects, the tree tenant is a very important measure or a very important feature to green the facade. The tree tenant is a tree that is planted in a window. So in the window is in the flat, in the apartment, a special construction is made. The windows, they are placed not in the facade, but a little bit in the apartment, so that a tree can be planted, and it grows out. The tree grows out of the facade. Hundertwasser said that cars have chased the trees up into the facades because there's not enough space in the cities, in the streets, to plant trees. So it's the tree tenant is a method to make the city more green, to make the architecture green. The expression of vertical green wasn't invented at this time, but I think Hundertwasser, with the tree tenant, he is really a forerunner of green architecture and of greening the facades, of vertical green in the cities. And the advantages of the tree tenant, I think they are not put into question anymore. It has become a standard, of course, that the tree tenants improve the city climate and, of course, also the well-being of the dwellers, because this is an important aspect in Hundertwasser architecture, the well-being of the dwellers, of the tenants of a house. The tree tenant bring moisture into the desert climate of the city as we experience it now in the summer, and they reduce the contrasts of dry and humid and of cold and warm. The tree tenants also function like vacuum cleaners. They swallow the finest and poisonous dust, and they swallow also the noise. They reduce the echoes. So there's a long list of advantages of the tree tenants. Also for the dwellers, it's having a tree tenant in a flat, in an apartment. It is like a curtain, and it creates also shelter, and it gives shadow, and but it lets in sunlight in the winter. But butterflies and birds will take their home in the tree tenant. So Hundertwasser thought that the tree tenant brings beauty and joy into the life of a tenant. And this is an important aspect, because what Hundertwasser criticized in modern architecture was that architecture, the functional architecture, the geometrical straight line, is something that hurts the soul. And the most important thing about Hundertwasser architecture is to set the people again into contact with nature and to give them beauty. This is the aspect that I also personally find that it speaks absolutely for Hundertwasser, because Hundertwasser is for the people, for the human being, for the well-being of the inhabitants of the city.
The reconnection to nature in general, that maybe, or especially at that time, wasn't really regarded in architecture and is way too little as well today. And I also heard once that his idea was also For example, to have fruit trees to grow into different windows so that the tenants could reach out and grab food from one of the tree tenants, which I think is also such a wonderful idea, as well as, for example, I think in some of the buildings also from the toilet, for example, it led out into the garden to become compost and kind of fertilizer for the gardens, which I think is really incredible thinking and a great way to really connect the humans that live in a building to nature and to bring nature back to a city. And as you said, also having trees in cities, people are obviously noticing more and more the importance, as you said, with the changing climate. And I think trees can even cool down streets if you have an alley of trees 5 to 9 degrees, which is very significant. And as you said, it definitely drastically improves well-being of the people who live in cities. So that's really wonderful. And I really love and respect his vision there. Could you maybe tell us about the side of 100 Wasser, that was actually also kind of a social activist, and he was very outspoken, as you mentioned, with his manifestos, with speeches he gave, and it wasn't just about nature that he spoke and ecology. It was also about, you know, certain beliefs that he stood up for and that he expressed, which were also some views on politics, society, and consumerism. What were his views there that he expressed?
100 Wasser always spoke of the three skins of a human being. I mentioned it before, the epidermis, the second skin, the clothes, and the third skin, the houses. But when Pierre Restonier, an art historian, wrote a big book about 100 Wasser art, it was in the 1990s, he had very intensive discussions with 100 Wasser, and he thought, Pierre Restonier, the art historian, thought that 100 Wasser's art and his concerns goes further on. It's not only about three skins, but Pierre Restonier said that 100 Wasser is also concerned with the fourth skin, that is social environment and identity, and the fifth skin, of course, it's a global environment, mankind. And what about fourth skin? It's identity. It's the idea of that we all are individuals, we all can be creative, we all have our identity, so we are not human beings in masses, but we are all individuals, and we should be creative and develop our own creativity. And there, for this individuality, there are special signs. For example, flags, 100 Wasser design flags for people to identify with their nation. He created stamps. He thought that stamps would be the ambassadors of a certain country and would connect people from country to country. The social environment, it's also, of course, it's interconnected with the fifth skin, with the global environment, because we are all a family of human beings all over the world, and we have to care for our planet. We just have one, this planet, and we have to be careful about what kind of attitude we have towards nature. You mentioned consumerism, the consume society. Of course, 100 Wasser was very critic about consumerism, about the exploitation of resources. He was very aware about the element water that we have to be very careful with our water resources, but also with other resources. Hundertwasser was very critic about the competences of human beings. And he thought that every human being should have a certain responsibility towards other human beings and also to the planet, to the environment. In the 1970s, he made speeches all over the world, and the headline was the request for a turn. Speeches were called or were given under the headline The Turn, and there Hundertwasser said that we live in a time where the competences do not match anymore. He constated that the doctors cannot heal, the teacher produces impotence to create, the scientist doesn't know that his inventions are useless and harmful, the architect is building cancerous, soulless formations. The politician is short-sighted, powerless, and unable. The economist's forecasts turn out to be a constant failure. The farmer is violating, destroying, and selling away his own land. So this is a list that would go on and go on. And I think the situation hasn't changed much, and it hasn't improved. Hundertwasser said that especially the artist and the architects have the duty to warn and to show ways out. As a main consequence, people, the human beings, should act according to the laws of nature. Hundertwasser formulated the peace treaty with nature. And he stipulated there that we should learn the language of nature. So I cannot explain what exactly he meant, but with all what Hundertwasser has done with his environmental campaigns, with his poster campaigns, with his engagement against nuclear power, for saving the seas, for saving the whales, for his campaigns for saving the marshlands in Hamburg in Lower Austria. With all these things, he showed up an example how we could understand nature, learn the language of nature, protect nature. He really was of the conviction that human beings are really a dangerous pest to the earth. Hard words, but if we go inside and we look at the things that are happening, I have to say that he was right, and it's really the time for a turn. We should have a peace treaty with nature. I think the first step would be a peace treaty between human beings, and then we can solve the problems of today. If we learn from nature, if we respect nature, if we try to live our lives in harmony with the laws of nature. And Hundertwasser set an example here as well. If one knows what simple life Hundertwasser led, then it could be exemplary. Hundertwasser said, only he who acts in harmony with plants and trees, who acts in accordance with the laws of nature and the cosmic cycle, cannot go wrong. So I think it's really time to go the right way.
I can 100% agree with that sentiment, and it's so lovely to listen to that, and I can really agree with kind of everything you said until now, and also identify with it and with his yearning for the reconnection of humans and nature and a peace treaty with nature, really. And I mean, right now there are still people living in 100 Wasserhauses today, right? So you can rent some of the apartments. Are there still buildings that are being actively used?
Of course, Hundertwasser built his architecture for people, for the tenants, for the user of his architecture. I'm not informed about how difficult it would be to get an apartment, for example, in the apartment house in Vienna, the Hundertwasser house in Vienna, or in the other apartment houses he designed, for example, in Magdeburg or in Darmstadt or in Plochingen. Hundertwasser built several apartment buildings in Germany, but his desire was to build different buildings of different functions in order to set an example for the different fields in architecture. So he redesigned a church, for example. And of course, this church is loved by the people of Bernbach, and it's also a place where visitors come to see this redesigned church. There are two museums. Hundertwasser built one museum for his artwork in Vienna, the Kunsthaus Wien. Of course, at the moment it is closed, I have to say, because it undergoes technical restoration and will be reopened in beginning of 2024. But all Hundertwasser architecture have a special purpose, and of course they are used and loved by the people who work there or who live there, or also the passers-by and the tourists who come. Hundertwasser has, for example, built redesigned a school building in Wittenberg in Germany. He has made several architecture projects as a home for ill children. For example, two buildings for the Ronald McDonald Foundation, one in Essen and one in Falkenburg in the Netherlands. Then, of course, Hundertwasser has designed industrial buildings because he wanted to set an example against the optical pollution. And he was invited by the mayor of Vienna in 1988 to redesign the district heating plant Spittelau in Vienna. And of course, this is an installation that is working, and it's a landmark. It's I think it's a sightseeing object still in Vienna. And also in Japan, there are several industrial buildings designed by Hundertwasser. It's in Osaka, the Mishima incineration plant and the sludge center. What else? We have a winery. Not we. It's you know, again, we are completely identifying here.
Yeah.
Hundertwasser has designed a winery for Napa Valley in California. He has designed a market hall for Switzerland. So all these projects are in function, and as I said, they are loved by the people who live there or work in or pass by or visit it as an example of more human architecture in harmony with nature.
I can imagine that. I would definitely love to visit one of his buildings someday, because it would be so lovely to see that and to experience also how different the atmosphere feels in one of those buildings.
ecological aspect of Hundertwasser architecture. It's really mainly the afforestation of roofs and the greening of the facades and the courtyards. What has not been implemented is the idea of a collection of rainwater or the use of the humus toilet. So Hundertwasser, in his ecological activities, he set also a focus on plant purification plant and on the humus toilet. And these two things, they couldn't be implemented yet in his architecture. So the time was not ripe for saying goodbye to the flush toilet and implemented humus toilet. I think this is something we have to go deeper into, and which we have to explore and find out how we can improve our system of the flush toilets and save water. And I think it's high time to reduce the waste of water through the flush toilets. But of course, the humus toilet, it's something you could perhaps install in your garden or in your own house, but in an apartment house it would be difficult. But at the moment I see no activities, no inventions, no innovations in that direction, that we start to save water and to clean water in a smaller dimension. Yeah, in nowadays everything is centralized, and there are big water purification plants, but it's not installed in one house, in one architecture. So I think we have to figure out, or this would be a challenge for engineers, to find out facilities for a more for a better better use of water. That's a need for the future, and that's also something Hundertwasser thought about, and he made suggestions for it. But it's a fact that, for example, the humus toilet has not been implemented in his architecture yet.
Mm-hmm, yeah, but I very much respect the idea, and would also be extremely excited to see that happening. And as you said, that is, I mean, something to work on for architects and designers, etc. And because, as you said, why have a big centralized water treatment plant if the water can be purified in your own home and then maybe used for the garden, and kind of creating an own purification and circular system for the resources we're using in our own home, which would be ideal and definitely something to focus on. But I want to thank you for the interview. It was lovely talking to you, and also I learned so much about Hundertwasser that I probably would have never learned otherwise. So thank you so much for sharing his visions and his story.
Also, I want to acknowledge and honor Indigenous and First Nations peoples as custodians of most of planet Earth's biodiversity and bearers of ancient knowledge. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize all Indigenous and First Nations peoples' strength, resilience, and deep connection to nature. Thank you.